Publishing Legends Network.
The views and opinions expressed by hosts and listeners on the Astonishing Dead Letter Office are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of Astonishing Legends Productions, the Astonishing Legends Network, or any affiliated entities or guests.
When something unexplainable happens to you, it can make you feel isolated or alone. But trust us, you're not. For over a decade, you've been sending your strange stories to Astonishing Legends. And now it's time for our fellow legenders to hear them too. Join us weekly in Blanket Fortiana as we dig through your intriguing messages to the Astonishing Dead Letter Office.
Tonight's episode, The Night Shift Protocol.
Tonight, we're headed into the sterile, fluorescent-lit halls of the night shift at a hospital. It's an environment where the veil between life and death is constantly being crossed so much, the machinery left behind might be used to request clearance for departure.
Well, we all know that hospitals are inherently liminal spaces and great ghost hunting grounds, much like theaters, churches, and then you have hospitals. Now, I would love to see the data on which one gets more ghost evidence, but in any of those areas, you're dealing with high emotion and exhaustion and passing souls on a daily basis, more so at hospitals. But if you think about it, churches, a lot of emotion there and also connected with death often. And theaters, you're acting all that out. So it's interesting where you do get a lot of this kind of activity, but tonight's story is particularly unsettling in a way, I guess, because it takes a piece of mundane, everyday medical equipment and turns it into a paranormal trigger. And it's also a story I have had a lot of personal recent experience with, so I found it particularly interesting. But what's fascinating about the hospital setting is how the staff deals with it, and I have some insights about that. Because it's treated less like a haunting and more like a mundane patient request in some ways.
Yeah, and while we don't know where this took place, the specific fix the coworker uses relies on a piece of folklore that was heavily prominent in the Appalachian Mountains and the American South, originally brought over by early European settlers, which we'll talk about. It's a highly localized death rite, in a way, a deeply ingrained superstition that you must physically alter a room the moment someone passes, or their energy gets trapped inside the architecture.
Yeah, we've talked about this many times on the main show, and then also for a few episodes of the Dead Letter Office as well. And yeah, the crux of it will not be a surprise for those of you who've been with us for a while, because it puts the idea of opening a window in a room where someone is about to pass or has passed at the center of not just a philosophical question or a spiritual one, but more of a practical one. I mean, how many modern buildings with their sealed windows and heavily climate-controlled environments are inadvertently trapping things that are waiting to drift away on the breeze?
Well, these days, so many of us spend our lives in these perfectly sealed, airtight boxes, but when the end comes, that could be a problem.
And I suppose that's the terrifying beauty of this dead letter. It's a collision of 21st century medical technology and 19th century folk belief. It makes you question if the machinery is simply malfunctioning or if it's acting exactly as it was designed to. And Scott, please do us the honors here for tonight's read.
My husband had an intriguing experience not long ago at work, and I'm curious about your take on it and if you're familiar with this lore and similar stories. My husband is a nurse at our local hospital. He and his coworker had been caring for a patient who passed away this particular day. This patient had been on fall precautions due to their unsteadiness. A part of this precaution was placing an alarm on the chair they sat on in their room. This alarm is pressure sensitive. Thus, if a patient tries to get up, it alarms, alerting staff that the patient is in danger of falling. As you would expect, in order to work, it must be plugged in. After the patient passed away and the room was cleaned, my husband and his coworker began hearing this alarm go off in the room. This happened multiple times. Initially, my husband thought one of the housekeepers must have taken a seat on the chair, setting the alarm off when they arose. However, no one was in the room. When it happened again, he thought that perhaps it was faulty, so he inspected it. All looked well, and he noted that the alarm was not plugged into the wall. However, it inexplicably continued to sound. Perplexed, he asked his coworker about it. She said she knew how to fix it and proceeded to walk into the room and open the window. Now, completely confused, my husband asked what she was doing. She explained that this had happened a few times before and that opening the window always solved the problem. More confused than ever, he asked why that would help. She replied that there's a belief that spirits can be trapped in the room they die in and that a window must be opened to allow the spirit to leave. Sure enough, after opening the window, the alarm ceased to go off. Neither of us ever heard this lore before, and we both worked in healthcare over 20 years and have never had an experience like this. Are you familiar with this belief? Can you explain what happened? I really appreciate any insight you can give on this.
The unexplained awaits. We'll return to the shadows momentarily.
Life is full of mysteries, just like the stories explored on Astonishing Legends. But sometimes the biggest challenge isn't the unknown out there, it's caring for a senior loved one at home. It can feel overwhelming to handle every meal, appointment, and emergency on your own. With Care.com, you don't have to do it alone. Find background-checked caregivers for anything, from companionship to dementia care, or browse senior living communities and read real reviews from families like yours. Whether you know exactly what support your loved one needs or you're still figuring it out, Care.com has options. For a limited time, use the code POD20 for 20% off your initial Care.com subscription. That's POD20, all one word, good for 20% off. Start your senior care search today. When it's not you, it's Care.com.
Now, back to the show.
Well, as I said in our preamble, or cold open, you could say, to tonight's Dead Letter, this story was a bit surprising in a good way to me, because I have had to deal with something very similar to this very recently, let's say this past October, with the passing of my own father and what was occurring then. And so this actually came up as a topic of discussion on Paul Gledhill's podcast, Anomaly. Gledders, as he's affectionately known in the UK, we call him Gled here as a close friend. But he had a Christmas roundtable with a lot of heavyweights there, Richard Haddam, Jim Harold, some of his friends in the UK, and Scott and myself. And actually, one of the people on the panel is also a good friend of the show, Liz Barclay.
Yes.
And how it came up, I think, of course, it was pretty recent for both Scott and I, but she was a former military nurse, I think for the Army, so she'd had a lot of experience with this. And that was one thing that was brought, that she brought up, because we were talking about other stories and spirits and passing. And when she was training younger nurses, she had some ghost stories, strange things that happened to her that weren't so obvious that she could make a definite summation or conclusion that they were definitely some kind of spirit interaction at the hospital she worked in, but just a few odd things which are pretty fascinating. So that podcast was Paul Gledhill's Anomaly, A-N-O-M-A-L-Y, .co.uk. If you want to find that, that's the webpage. And he's got some other links in there as well to Richard Haddam's podcast. But that's episode 12, An Anomaly Grand Christmas Gathering for 2025, where we discuss this. And And Liz goes by at Uncanny Lassie. She's part of the Uncanny community there, very heavily into that, on X, if you want to find her. But she was talking about the story of when she would train student nurses and young nurses starting out, when they would prep the body, and how reverent it was and gentle, because to her feeling, it's still pretty fresh, and she wants to treat her patients as if they're still living and give them the dignity and respect they still deserve even after they've passed, which involves a little bit of cleanup and presentation of the body, especially for loved ones coming in to say their final goodbyes. And one thing she does is generally they open a window. They do that all the time. Right. And of course, the student nurse will be like, well, why are you doing that? And she goes, well, there's a reason for that. And a lot of us believe that it aids in the transition from life to death. And it just kind of helps with that process. but they'd never heard of it, which is interesting to me, and I think you as well. Tonight's story that the husband of the author here had been working in healthcare for 20 years. I think also the author as well, and they'd never heard of it.
That was surprising to me, actually. Of course, I'm in the South. This is a prominent thing here. Like you, I lost my mom in October. I had seen her shortly before she passed, but I wasn't there when she passed. Right. So I don't know what happened in that room, but my grandmother passed her mother about 6 months before that. And they did open the window in that case. Mm. So there's definitely something going on there. And then a little bit of our research here, we found out in the Appalachian and Southern U.S., this is part of the death rite. So that's connected to early American folklore. But opening the window is just one step of it. There were other things that are part of Appalachian folklore, like immediately stopping all the clocks in the room to freeze the time of death and prevent the soul from being confused by the passage of time. And then something else, which you reminded me as we were preparing for this episode, we talked about in the Villisca Axe Murder series that we did on Astonishing Legends. In a lot of cases, they'll cover all the mirrors with a dark cloth. So the departing spirit won't see its own reflection and become trapped in the glass. That's one theory there on that.
Boy, that's a death twilight zone or a Rod Serling's night gallery nightmare.
Yeah.
More like that, being trapped in a painting or anything really is frightening as a spirit because there's no time limit on that, I guess. So, but I didn't know that about some of the other traditions, like you said, stopping the clocks. That's new to me. But anything to aid in the transition, again, passing from one realm of the living to the departed, of eternal life, in my belief. But there are, of course, other cultural traditions that do different things. And again, folks, if you want to hear us talk more in depth, and I get fairly emotional, on Glenn's podcast, there's more discussion about that, about some of the things that happened, but I'll recount some of them here because I know a lot of folks haven't heard it here on our show and our feed. But we were talking a little bit about, I think I mentioned the Jewish tradition, which is as soon as somebody has passed, the proper thing to do is as a mark of respect and humility is to place the body on the floor. So they died in a bed, you place them on the floor. This is to show, again, a sign of respect and a bit of a metaphor for returning to the earth.
Oh, interesting.
From whence you
came. I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, and then I'd known that, but like, of course, there's a deeper meaning and tradition about that. You then place the feet towards the door, and the person is covered with a sheet. And the Orthodox tradition, this is done about 20 minutes after death, because there's also a symbolism of just the frailty of life and how, you know, you're alive 1 minute, gone the next.
Memento mori.
That's right. And it's also about humility and preparing to meet God. So as the quote goes here, from dust you are and to dust you will return.
Yes.
So you go back to nature again.
Yes.
You've had your experience here. Now
dust
it's
thou
time for
art
the...
and unto dust thou shalt return.
Yeah. And in the Muslim tradition, I think within 24 hours, the body has to be prepared, which is a washing that is done ritually. And the body has to be cleansed an odd number of times, so that's interesting, by the same gender family members will do that, but it has to be an odd number, like three times usually. And then it's wrapped in three plain white cotton sheets, and that represents your equality before God. No embalming is allowed, no cremation. And I think the person's either, and this is where I think it maybe depends on the person or family, sometimes you're buried without a casket or you have a simple one but then some will say that the in-ground burial is generally forbidden. So everybody's in every culture has their ways, but this is what's interesting, I guess, in, you know, a fairly secular setting like most hospitals. Now, everyone knows, of course, many hospitals have a religious organization that is funding them or has founded them. So
yes,
the hospital that my dad was in, and this is not the skilled nursing facility that he ended up passing in, but for a month and a half, he was at a hospital. Mm-hmm. And that was backed by a Catholic organization. So the Catholic Church, not that we're Catholic, but, you know, it's open to everybody, of course. But so there's a bit of a spirituality and a religious tradition involved in the hospital, but it's secular, right? You don't have to be of that tradition to be treated there. But a few odd things, I'm just kind of rambling out of order, but a couple of odd things that have happened leading up to that. He was at several facilities before that. And I know that chair sensor very well because they would set that up because, you know, you don't want to stay in bed the whole time. Sometimes he liked to sit up in a chair and look out the window or just watch TV with us. You just want to change positions. So they're like, that's fine. So what they would do is take the hospital chair that's by the bed and put the sensor down, which is it's like a very flat, thin piece of vinyl, rectangular. And you can kind of see the sensors in it, the pressure sensors, but basically just like, you know, a sheet of vinyl that has a cord. And that cord goes to a little control box, which then either plugs in or I think has a battery backup, I think maybe 9 volts. But what I was told is that's not always plugged in. It doesn't often have the battery because it's not well used. And then, of course, for a whole hospital, you're going to be changing them all the time. So they would just generally plug it in.
Yeah, because that was the point I wanted to make, because when I was researching the story, I did find that it was possible. You know, they did have the battery backup, so that just like the live call things and all those things that you have for senior citizens or people who are at a fall risk, they have a secondary system in case, it gets unplugged or like, you know, if the person, God forbid, if they get out of the chair and then fall and unplug it themselves on the way down, like maybe there's a battery in there. But to your point, institutionally, that is a lot. That's a lot to keep up with, putting fresh batteries in like 100 of these things in every room where people are coming and going and getting admitted and passing away all the time. It's like, how do you stay on top of that? So there's not necessarily the case here that even though it was unplugged, it could have been because there was still a battery in there. But why is it just randomly going off when no one's in the room? However, I did see too that when the batteries are low and the device is unplugged, it might chirp like a fire alarm.
That's a different thing though. Yeah, the chirp is not the, oh my gosh, call the whole staff
over. Yeah, that's
true.
That's right. It's not going to be the same sound.
You don't want to alarm, have panic there. The sound I heard the most that was ongoing and I finally learned how to turn this off is the IV drip.
Oh, yeah.
So when it's out, it'll start beeping and that doesn't go. You have to let the charge nurse know. And so they'll turn that off. But with the sensor, yes, my dad was a fall risk. And as you well know, too, like with the Hillrom brand, I know these brands so well by now. Hillrom, there's a smart bed. So has rails on each side. They don't like to put them up because that's considered containment, like possibly against somebody's will, but depends on what your condition is. But you could have one rail down, and then the sensor would also detect if you're just sitting on the edge of the bed. Like, it won't go off.
Right.
So like, if you just want to swing your legs over, sit on the edge of the bed, it'll allow that. Or you could set the bed to, I think, cause an alarm if you shifted like that, because it signals the person's about to get out of bed, and especially if they're a fall risk, and if there's a dementia risk involved. Yeah. Normally the bed would be set, once you turn that on the bed, and what's cool is that there's lighted icons that show up on the floor, so you can a nurse can walk by and see what's turned on with the bed. But if you get up totally or fall out, then the alarms go off, and that goes to the desk, and they'll come rushing over. The other thing that they had was the camera, because there wasn't just my dad, but there's several people on the floor that didn't want to be there, and they would get out of bed. It's like, and so there's a box with a camera on it.
Yep.
And that goes to, I think, another control center.
Yeah, I cross paths with those things too. Where it's folks are monitoring them from somewhere else. It's like a security camera.
Yeah, I think it's a service. It could be at the, I didn't ask too many questions about that, but it basically,
it's a B2B thing. Like it's like a company that's got a contract with the hospital and then they roll these things in and somebody somewhere else is sitting there making sure the person isn't fleeing the room, I guess.
So. And as much tragedy and sadness that goes with it, there are humorous moments that happen. My dad had one and I don't think he ever tried that while we were there. We were there every day for the full duration of the visiting hours, but there's a camera on a box. It's on a rolling pole it's got a motion sensor. So they can see you. Also, I think there's a motion sensor just alerts them like, oh, this person's stirring.
Yeah.
And they might get up and then they can talk to you and you can talk back. There's a microphone on it and also rings the desk. But the funny part is the poor lady next to us who I think had some dementia, but it was also very feisty. Mm. She kept constantly trying to get out of bed. And so the speaker would come on like, ma'am, you have to get back in bed. We're not going to do that. Get back. And she would swear at it. So that was.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was just.
That's what something my grandmother would have said. Yeah.
Right. But generally, like if you're sitting in the chair, it's something you want to do. Like the nurse, hey, you want to sit up? Like, yeah, okay. And so maybe one time it went off and it's like, it's not jarring, but it's noticeable. And, you know, it's a very simple device. So in all the time that he was in facilities, like nothing that odd ever happened, but it does happen a lot, which is again, right, why I'm surprised this person had never heard of that. In the last 2 years, I must have met maybe 75 nurses of all different categories.
Right.
You know, nurse assistant certifieds, NACs, CNAs, certified nursing assistants, RNs, all the practical nurses, the whole thing. And they were all wonderful, I got to say. But they all had different experiences, and I didn't want to get too involved with it. But I did ask a few, does anything weird ever happen? And one nurse, Jackie, I'll give her a shout out, but she's a really fun character. But she was, she said, yes, every day, something weird happens. And so,
right.
And they're very busy with other patients. So I didn't ask her, but she was like, yes, adamantly. Oh yeah. I got tons of stories. I asked a younger NAC, and she says, well, I've only been working here 6 months, so I've never really experienced anything that's happened. But she says, she goes, people are passing all the time here. It's like, it's very likely. And what I liked is that she was young, but very professional. Like, she was just very even toned. And she was just like, yeah, it's possible. And so the one weird thing that happened when he first went in is that when he'd gone into the first hospital, which was a different one, we were sitting there and we kind of settled down. He'd had a kind of a bad infection. So my mom was there. She was napping in the chair. He was napping in the bed. I'm watching TV. I'm at the other end of the room. And as you all know, there's a sink, of course, in every room. And there's of course, you got your lotions and antiseptics. And there's a paper towel dispenser. And all the ones, facilities I had was always kind of the same one. E-Motion is the brand. So it's a motion sensor. But you have to put up your hand within it at least a foot of the thing for it to go off. And of course, more often than not, you would see providers and nurses like frantically waving to get the thing to go up close, because it didn't, you know, it's not that sensitive. So we were just sitting there. I think that was like the first day we were in there, and it's just very quiet in there. And then suddenly the thing spits out a towel. She goes, you know, I saw the blue light come on and it just spits out a towel. Like, well, that's interesting, because nobody's in here moving.
Right.
And again, and it was all day, all night. You see nurses come in, and they're waving their hand in front of it to get it to go. And again, within like a foot. So the E-Motion paper towel dispenser, great ghost hunting device.
Yeah. You need to take that on your next lockdown, right? But so why are you putting up a paper towel dispenser? Just trust me.
Something's going to, it's a very like a REM pod or a cat toy. Like, it's just another a towel came out. There's no denying that. It's not an accident. But I mean, who knows? Yeah. Again, I think I casually asked, like, does this thing ever go off on its own? And the nurse like, no, not really. And I think she had a bit of a grin. I think she knew what I was talking about.
Right.
So this happens all the time. And like I said, to get to know, especially for the health and care of your loved one or yourself, is the nurses are there, boots on the ground all the time. They spend the most time with the patient. They have the most experience in the room. You know, doctors come in and they'll make an assessment and talk with you, but that's like 5-10 minutes at most. And they got to make other rounds. The nurses are constantly in there, and they know generally how much time you have left. And with other relatives, it was like within hours, like, you better get down here. She's got about 3 hours.
Absolutely. They know. Well, there's things I think that they recognize that they don't necessarily want to share with family members, that like, well, when this happens, that means that death is imminent within a certain amount of time. There's no reason to give you as the family member all of those details. You just need to trust that when they tell you it's time to come down here, it's time to get down there.
It's time to get down there. Start making the calls and getting a hold of family and friends. So yeah, they have a lot of experience. And when I was talking about Liz, like, she just knows that, like, yeah, stuff happens, and it's not, you can't chart it or track it, but it happens. And so there's somebody I've been following, and I've been trying to get her on the show. If anyone knows her out there, I would love to interview her for the show, is hospice nurse Julie. She's become quite popular, so she's kind of hard to get hold of, but great clips on like hospice nurse care and things that happen. And she talks about things like this, you know, and of course there's the things that always happen. Like, there's the death rattle, which is fluid accumulating, and it sounds terrible, but they're actually not suffering. And there's things that actually happen with that. So what happens after that, though, is exactly what happened with my father. So the way that we learned is my mom and I, we showed up to the skilled nursing facility where he was at, and he was under hospice care at the time. And we were met in the hallway by one of the head nurses. And she said, you know, gave us the news, which was not great. But then I wanted to go in there because there were no chairs in the hallway. I didn't want my mom to have to stand. So I went in the room and they were prepping the body. And they, as the nurse said before I went in there, she goes, just be aware that, you know, things happen to the body when someone passes. And I said, I understand. And, you know, I said, there's some cleanup. She goes, yes. So I just went in there to grab a chair, and the two nurses, CNAs, nurse and a CNA were in there doing their prep work. And I noticed that the window was open by about 5 inches or so, not totally wide open, but just enough. And, you know, they gave me a smile and I took the chair out. The other nurse that was in there, the charge nurse, I believe, kind of came out again. And I said, well, I notice you have the window open. And I said, do you folks do that for a specific reason? You know, knowing, of course, why. And what she said was simply like, yeah, we have a superstitious bunch here and we always do that. And we got to talking just very briefly about it. And I said, yes, I imagine there's, you know, as you said, there's several things that go on. She goes, yes, part of it is for any odors that are there in the room, but also we just think it helps a little bit. And we yeah. always do it.
Yeah.
Now, my personal belief is that I don't know. Okay. All speculation. I've not had an NDE or anything, but I personally don't believe that you need the window open to pass on.
Right.
But it is one of those things like, well, it couldn't hurt.
Right.
Crack the window if you can. And there's also, for me, as I took it, and it was a nice warm October day. It was around noon. And then there's some other weird things that happened. Maybe one day Scott and I'll talk about that, but it was nice outside and it was just a nice warm breeze coming in. I said, well, that's nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if it helps you get to wherever you're going, all the more better. And I'm glad they did it. I'm glad that that's part of the tradition, because I'd like to see things not so clinical.
In addition to the window, and we have to mention in Germany, they call it the Seelenfenster.
Just because, means, I'm sure, have you heard the term defenestration?
Yeah, of course.
Our friend Marty's, that's one of his favorite words.
The Seelenfenster, there is a sole window. This is, I guess, in parts of Germany and Switzerland. There's a architectural commitment to this, and that some traditional houses are actually built with a dedicated tiny window that remains permanently shuttered and sealed, only unlatched and opened in the exact moments following a family member's death. It's like, that's the exit. And in some cases, they put a neon sign up that says flashes and says exit, go this way. No, I'm kidding. I made that part up.
Jeez, but, I hope so.
I think that would be kind of cool though. But yeah, so they have that. Then the other thing I thought was really interesting too is a Celtic and British tradition of unbinding. So in traditional Irish and rural British folklore, and, you know, Gled can correct me or some of our British listeners can, but I guess opening the windows and doors was also accompanied by a practice called unbinding. The living had to physically untie every knot in the death chamber, including shoelaces, clothing ties, and decorative ribbons, to ensure the soul's departure wouldn't get snagged, tethered, or hindered on its way out. So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the other thing, and I couldn't find a clip with hospice nurse Julie about this when we were prepping for this episode, but I did find another hospice nurse on TikTok, and she said this is something that we do in terms of opening the windows.
Yeah.
And she said, regardless of what you believe, we believe it's important to embrace anything that makes the family feel better about the passing. Right. Like, there's no reason to be like, oh, we're not doing that. That's stupid. These are the most loving, caring people, and in your moment of losing a loved one, they're there to support you. And if you have a crazy, you know, if you, you know, and this isn't crazy to me. So crazy is the wrong word for me to say, but like, if you have something that they've never heard of, if it's not detrimental or dangerous, they're going to say, yeah, go for it.
Yeah.
We'll do whatever you want to make you feel better or to help your loved one move on and whatever your belief system is with regard to that. But I think it's a pretty fascinating thing. I agree with you. I don't think, well, the window's closed, you're stuck in there. You know, that's getting stuck to me has more to do with a surprise
death.
Yeah,
that's what they say. Surprise or unfinished business, a regret, things like that might keep somebody around a while. And it's interesting about stopping the passage of time. I, you know, people who have come back from NDEs, and those who are mediums, I can't imagine this either. There's no sense of time passing. There's just right. Time is a perspective here. And now with all the other UAP stuff, time is front and center of a lot of discussions about how people are experiencing time. I've heard somebody talk about aliens
I think I sent you a clip last night about how they were UAP. They were talking about humans flying reverse engineered.
Yes, that was
craft,
one thing. Right.
That are actually time machines. And the biggest problem for them, if you believe any of this at all, is that the UFOs themselves, the UAP themselves, are time machines. And even though the pilots can control the craft, the time displacement part is disorienting, and that's the hardest thing that they haven't been able to master, if you believe we're reverse engineering UFOs and people are right. flying them. But whatever, it's worse than G-forces and all those other physical things that a pilot like an F-35 might deal with, because in addition to all of that, if it's right. even present, and there may not be G-forces in these cases, but apparently temporal displacement or acceleration or deceleration is even harder to deal with as a human pilot in that situation. So,
yeah, because we're built to, I think to live our lives as we do, and I think as we're meant to, we experience time as a linear fashion here, as another dimensional kind of thing where we're going down a timeline, you could say, beginning, middle, and end. And that's how we're built. And so when you disrupt that because of how a UFO flies, how do we get from death to UFOs? Well, I believe it's all tied in some
way. Somehow we're always,
I do believe that. No, I do. I'm not being flippant here. I do believe there's some kind of connection to all that, all of this. And you are displacing so much or creating so much energy that it disrupts and displaces space-time.
Yeah.
You're creating a wave or a bubble or a ripple that affects the pilot. And it's completely disorienting in such a weird way that I was very curious to experience that myself, but also don't want to. I have enough trouble with managing my own time here on Earth. And so somebody had explained in some clip that aliens, what they experience is not a linear time like we do, but they measure time, you could say, quote unquote, in experiences that are layered. So there's really no beginning, middle, or end for them. And like the way we experience it, it's just experiences, which is interesting because, towards the end of life, that's all you got. So especially if you have dementia, there are experiences, and what day of the week it is, who knows? What happened this morning? I don't know, the patient would say. But they remember very clearly certain things that happened in the past. And so that's what it boils down to, is that they couldn't tell you what happened, what they had for lunch an hour ago, but they can remember something that happened when they were teenagers or kids even. So, but getting back to this experience, maybe they had never run into it because, again, as Liz Barclay said, this is not something they teach, of course, because then you have that fine line you were talking about in the cold open about something being institutional and recognized and studied, and then we have data on this, and this is what happens. And then there's the experiential part. And I think that's maybe the difference, as Liz said. It's like, no, they don't teach you that in nursing school, but it's something that everyone deals with. And she said, that's what we do. So learn how to do it. And, we're gonna show you how, but that's the practical side of it, where you're doing, like you said, these things to comfort the living and the dead. And so in a hospital, it's like, a lot of people pass away there, but maybe not as much as a skilled nursing facility that offers hospice care, or hospice workers who go to the home, or a strictly hospice facility where that's the purpose of being there, is that from what I'd learned, you have 6 months or less to live, and that's how you get the diagnosis or the approval to go into hospice. And at the end of 6 months, you get another assessment if you're going to go past that. And some people graduate past that, they say.
Yep.
They get better and they get to go home. Yep. And then some folks don't. So that's the purpose, is keeping you comfortable rather than treating anything major that comes up. The whole point is just to keep you comfortable and for your last moments. And so they see a lot more passing than maybe other facilities or even other providers and care workers. So the only other thing that was happening, like I said, as far as equipment, a lot more stuff happened in the couple of years before my dad's passing than I would say after. Some strange minor things happened during that point, One thing that happened, I think a year and a half ago, it was around March, maybe 2 years ago. There are more like very slight poltergeistery things that happened that, again, that weren't overt, but made you question what had just happened. One of them, my mom and dad, you know, being here at the house, and my mom and dad having not a bad argument, but just like, I'm not doing that. Yes, you are, you know, kind of a thing, just old married couple stuff. And so it was a lively discussion, you could say. And I walked into the living room, and suddenly they have a rolling, it was like a DeLonghi, you know, rolling portable air conditioner that has a vent.
Right.
And so, and as an exhaust vent, but I came into the living room, and suddenly as I approached the couch where it's sitting next to, that thing came on full blast into my face.
Okay.
And I was just like, what? Like, what is, there is a remote that's been lost for a long time. And suddenly, you know, again, it was early March, so it's still cold out. It had not been turned on since the previous summer. Okay. Uh-huh. And it just kind of came on, and it was like, well, that's weird. It's something that's pressure sensitive. Okay. It's got, you know, it's activated, right? This thing, it's either on or it's off. And when you turn it on, it takes a few seconds to kind of like boot up, you could say. And suddenly this thing just kind of blasted on. And I just thought, like, you know, again, I wasn't sure. I was like, okay, something's messing with us, maybe. Or it could just be the energy in the room. But a lot more of those kind of things happen where things would just kind of turn on. A motion sensor floodlight that they'd bought years ago, never been installed. It was just sitting in the box. And this thing is down inside the box. And for a few nights, it would just turn on by itself. That was amazing because, like, is this thing even charged? I mean, it's been years since they purchased it. I know there's residual battery power, but this thing's solar charged. And so it was like, that's weird. And it first kind of came on with a pattern, like a test pattern, like very like blink, 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 on steady for 5 seconds, then blink, blink. Like it was a pattern, like, oh, is it going through some kind of self-test? Like, it doesn't have that.
And this is all before your dad passed away.
Yeah. So then my point is that more weird little things like that happen before he passed. Now, here's the defining line between stuff like that for me that happens that in that kind of realm. If that was plugged in, like I said, which it was, it's just like, okay, that's very odd that it just turned itself on. If it was unplugged, that's another level.
Right.
So now suddenly it has energy and power and from a usual source, it's not plugged in.
That's another thing I want to point out about this story, about tonight's dead letter too, just for folks who are like, oh, it was the batteries, they were dying or whatever. It doesn't matter that it was unplugged, but just want to remind everybody that when they opened the window, it stopped beeping.
That's right. And again, that's a total coincidence if you don't believe any of this at all.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what it is. Like, you know, electronic stuff does go off on its own, I do believe. But I always put it with context. There's a great short clip of, I think somebody actually took like cell phone video of this, but this is passed around years ago. I think I even shared it with you. But for folks that know, you know, with a memory care unit, the doors are locked at night because of sundowners' condition. Folks with dementia or Alzheimer's can get up and try to leave. They don't know where they are. They want to go home. This is not home. And so the doors are locked. And there's one door at this care facility, memory care unit, where there's a push bar to get out, but that's locked. And so this thing was like rattling in at night, like, like, somebody wants to get out of there. And so the guard was like, this thing just kind of rattles on its own, and took cell phone video of it. And not a bad thing, but just somebody's there. They're a little bit confused. And it's like, this is not home. I want to go home and be comfortable and sit in my chair. And somebody was just trying to leave. But also that happened, that push bar thing happened at one of the places I used to work at, which is a fairly new office building. So in kind of summation here, as we're closing out, I enjoyed this story. If you're asking with this belief, am I familiar? Yes.
Well, on that note, our listener who is remaining anonymous, we want to thank you for sending your story in. It's fascinating. And folks who have encountered this kind of stuff before, there's probably a lot of people out there who've been through these same kinds of things that Forrest and I have recently been through. And those that haven't, you probably will eventually cross paths with some of these experiences. And you know, think about it. Notice what's happening around you. I think a lot of times we spend so much time looking for ghosts and abandoned asylums and the dark woods and all of that. But these hospitals, that's the grand central station of human existence. That and hotels and, like Forrest said earlier, theaters, people arriving, departing, being emotional. Yeah, it's a fascinating story. So thank you so much for sending it in. Folks, if you have a story, please send it to deadletteroffice@astonishinglegends.com, and we may even read it on the air. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode of the Dead Letter Office.
The Astonishing Dead Letter Office is hosted by Scott Philbrick and Forrest Burgess and is executive produced by Tess Feifel. The show is edited and mixed by Sarah Voorhees-Wendell at VW Sound. The theme is based on the Astonishing Legends theme by Judson Crane at Founder Music, arranged by Alan Carissia, who composes all the other music in the show. Tommy Beaver Design created the logo. The announcer is John Bowler. That's me. Stories are lightly edited for length, content, and readability, but otherwise presented as they're sent to us. We're always looking for more dead letters, so if you have a story of your own you'd like to share, email it to deadletteroffice@astonishinglegends.com. Please include how you would like to be credited. First name only, first name last initial, anonymous, a pseudonym. Let us know. Due to the number of emails coming in, we often cannot respond, but we do read them all. No part of this show may be reproduced anywhere without permission. Copyright Astonishing Legends Productions.
Life is full of mysteries, just like the stories explored on Astonishing Legends. But sometimes the biggest challenge isn't the unknown out there, it's caring for a senior loved one at home. It can feel overwhelming to handle every meal, appointment, and emergency on your own. With Care.com, you don't have to do it alone. Find background-checked caregivers for anything, from companionship to dementia care, or browse senior living communities and read real reviews from families like yours. Whether you know exactly what support your loved one needs or you're still figuring it out, Care.com has options. For a limited time, use the code POD20 for 20% off your initial Care.com subscription. That's POD20, all one word, good for 20% off. Start your senior care search today. When it's not you, it's Care.com.